Okay, welcome to another episode of Simon Says. We have a very special guest today, Michelle Lau.
Yes, yes, I'm glad to be here.
And Michelle, you were here almost 1 year ago.
Oh my goodness, time flies.
And remember, we have the midnight recording also.
We did.
Yeah, we did. And this time we have a new
history
setup.
History repeats itself.
And now it's like just very cozy, right?
Yes, yes.
And Michelle, tell us what you're doing here again.
I'm here again for training purposes. I always enjoy myself when I come to KL to do this.
Now, one of the very interesting things, of course, I remember the last time we talked about the Roe v. Wade, the abortion case.
And, oh, yes.
And we talk about education, family, and those are always your passion. But this year, you are also involved with arts and entertainment.
Definitely. Finally, our TV show has aired, and it turned out to be a lot more interesting than I had thought it would be. It's a reality TV show involving young people, ages ranging from 10 to 16. So, reality really is reality. They were doing a lot of things that it was not scripted, and they were really flowing with whatever the challenges were. So every episode is getting more interesting now. So we're always looking forward to a Saturday afternoon to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So those are on, what do you call the show?
Lion's Den, Raising Up Kidpreneurs.
So those are actually produced by, I think, Valve Venture, and who are also supporting this Simon Says show.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Now, one of the things, of course, is you really love, you know, talking to kids and helping them to develop understanding, and kind of is related to what we are talking about today, because we want to discuss government. And earlier on, you were telling me that somehow you are becoming more and more interested in the governmental arena.
Oh, my goodness. I used to say, I want nothing to do with government. I'm not interested. You know, like a lot of people, I thought that it's dirty and I just want to stay far away from it. But the more that I've been looking at the what's happening in the nation, and probably in many other nations too, it's what's happening in the nation is very is of great concern.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of Malaysians are concerned. And finally, I'm thinking like I should do my part if ever the opportunity arises.
It's very interesting that I think Lyra was just talking about the Bursa, ex-Bursa chairperson, Thomas Phan, and he was in corporate, then he went into faith journey, and then while he was in Philippines, all of a sudden he saw systemic poverty, and he realized that to beat systemic poverty, you need to change government. And one of the themes that we have been talking about in this show is, you know, we want people to have the opportunity to pursue happiness. But to do that, they need to have a measure of self-determination. And that very concept is linked with independence. Of course, Michelle, we are all from Sarawak, you know, and we know
right. There
is that wave of the spirit of self-determination or independence. We'll go into that a bit later, but it's interesting to talk about that. But one of the things, of course, from Sarawak, we can understand that, you know, every time we look at, you know, how come there's no change and people will be like, well, the voters are not feeling it, you know, whatever term they want to use it. But then you also have the other perspective, which is there is a lot of systemic issue, poverty, and people just splash the money, and sometimes politicians are doing, I would say, correct things, you know, doing development, of course, for their own self-interest, but nevertheless, it works. I mean, as in the votes go to them. So what do you feel about this systemic issue? You know, is it really, we have such a system, you know, like what Thomas Phan saw in Philippines, that the system caused people to be in poverty? Or is it more of the voters maybe not having the courage to explore change?
I think, Simon, it's a little bit of both, or rather it's a lot of both. You will always have the politicians trying to stay in power for as long as possible. Somehow here in Malaysia, it's not like what you see in the UK. And where a prime minister would step down mm-hmm. if he realizes he's not the best person to lead the nation forward. But here it's like, I'm in power, I'm going to stay in power for life.
Just total shameless.
Absolutely shameless. And no matter what, and it's becoming more shameless, no matter what, how many, you know, exposés and how many people get exposed, they just still want to hang on to that power and position. And it's, I would say it's very much selfishness and it's not for the nation at all. It is not a good thing because the nation belongs to nobody, no one person in particular. It belongs to all of us. And so everything that is happening in the Malaysian government right now, oh my goodness, it's going from crazy to crazier. Mm-hmm. Finally, I'm at that point where I say, I want to get back into government. A long time ago, I was a local councillor. In the days when I did not understand a thing about government or even local government, I went in there and I learned quite a few things, but even then I didn't have a passion. Mm-hmm. But now I'm beginning to develop a passion to govern. And I would really like to, in any capacity, I guess, even as a really good advisor or whatever. And so I am looking for an opening and let's see how that turns mm-hmm. out. It'll be interesting.
So is it fair to say that because of your experience and exposure in the education area, now arts and entertainment with young people, you see that the change at the governmental level is critical?
Oh, absolutely critical. I think for Sarawakians, you were saying, is there enough knowledge, education among the voters? I would say not a lot. And there's also quite a lot of fear that if there's a change of government, things will destabilize. Mm. And I think that has kept a lot of voters continuing to either not vote or vote for the incumbent. And that has cost us and is continuing to cost us. And I don't think it's going to go well for the next generation. Mm-hmm. So when the 18-year-olds began to vote, we were hoping for a great landslide of something mm-hmm.
It
new.
Didn't turn out to be.
It didn't turn out to be so. So somebody's been educating some people, but not everybody's
been educated.
And I would say on the Sarawak side, a lot of people are just not willing for a change or a great change. And that is a shame because without a great change, we're not going to go very far. And I think a lot of people are still too selfish, thinking that if nothing changes, I can go on as usual. I can do my business. I can hopefully earn a lot of money. But money is not the only thing.
Yep.
There's so much more involved than just money
for now. Because what's going to happen to the next generation or the next generation?
It's serious. In the same way as our Chinese forefathers never felt that they were going to stay here for long. But hey, our roots go real deep now.
Yep, yep.
And in a way, we never asked the British government to give us any grants of land that were freehold or even the perpetual titles. So we end up with all the leaseholds and everything. And I think a lot of people do not realize we're just renting land from the government. It's like, what? I'm not buying land. No, you're really not. You're renting. And so it may pass from hand to hand, but you're renting for only 60 years in Sarawak or 90, which is pretty good for now. But hey, that's just one generation and a bit, maybe one and a half generations, and that's about it. The perpetual, the titles in perpetuity, there are not many of those. And so what kind of, you know, because our forefathers thought that they would earn the money and take it all back to dear old China. And it's such a shame. We've had to pay for that now.
It's very interesting because the whole leasehold is really more common in those colonies, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore. And I think even the British didn't think that all these migrants will stay put for a long time.
Probably.
And they'll be like packing their bags. But one of the things, of course, we talk about the connection between the people and the land. And it's like you need to own the land
to feel that you are part of the place. And that leads me to another issue, which is related to what you shared earlier on, you know, your experience as a local councillor
in the local government. You know, there is a saying that there shouldn't be taxation without representation. So it's like right now we don't have rightful representation at local government. So
that's right.
Okay, maybe for both of you to answer, are you surprised that so many people, I mean, when I say so many people, it's really what we're hearing in the mainstream news, are objecting to local government elections? I mean, we know that the likes of UMNO, GPS, they don't want to give out. They have tons of representatives right now in local government. They're not going to share with anyone. But what do you think about this? I mean, today, the local government minister, Ngan Kwok-Man, just came out and say, well, this is not a priority. I mean, it's not politically convenient for him to say anything. Then he just said, oh, maybe in 10 years. So I'm like,
maybe. When joking, he may no longer be there.
But what do you think? I mean, what's the path forward, you know? Is it something that can be done realistically soon, or are voters not interested to self-determine?
From what I can see in Sarawak, I think people are a little bit lazy to self-govern, which is a shame. But even as a student in the UK, I was given a voting card and everything to vote for the local government. And it was very...
As a non-citizen?
They just let you vote as long as you are resident there for a while. You know, it's like anyone could stand as a candidate and you say you love your neighborhood, you love the area. And why not? Each one of us should be able to do that. And we should not have to be politically motivated or be part of any political party. So it is a model that is working successfully there. Why not here? I remember, I think it was in the very first year I was a local councillor, and we went, we were sent to Kuching for a seminar. I believe it was more of a brainwashing seminar, now I look back, to try and teach us all these things. And they brought in a really old civil servant who said to us, it is a bad idea or not necessary at all to have local government elections. And even when I was listening to him, I was totally not convinced. And I mean, of course, I was not elected into office. I was appointed into office. But still, I felt something churning inside of me. And I really wanted to stand up and say, you are wrong and I do not agree with you. I wish I had. But I didn't know enough in those days to really say too much. But just listening to him, like I said, I was not convinced by a single thing he said. And so all the arguments they put forward are just arguments of convenience from what I can see. So, I mean, what's wrong with letting people vote for the local government? Like we're always teasing my husband that he should be mayor because he just loves everything about Cebu, you know? He drives past any area. He'll say, oh, the drains are such and such. Oh, this place ought to have what. And he's always looking at these things. So we're always teasing him that you should be mayor. You'd be perfect. Whereas I drive past, I don't really see half of the stuff he sees, you know? So it's just, if you have residents or citizens like that, it's so good because they actually love the place rather than those who, like, you know, sit up somewhere and I don't know. I'm not saying they're not doing a good job. I mean, the local government, but what's wrong with letting the people choose? What's a true democracy otherwise, you know?
Yeah, I think that the event you mentioned is what they call BTN, Biro Data Negara. And basically, they're trying to say, you know, this is what it is. We need to maintain harmony, etc., etc. And I remember one time, a high court judge from Sabah, even high court judge need to attend all those things. And he was, I think he was objecting to the whole thing.
Excellent.
And he even came out and blast Mahathir about it a few years ago.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's just kind of reminder. But Lyra, what do you think about this local government development? You know, I mean, are you surprised with the backlash?
No, I mean, not at all. Because, I mean, we know that DAP is part of the unity government. I mean, to say that we are disappointed, I don't think, I guess it really is as what it has been mentioned, that it is politically inconvenient. Mm. So, but I don't think that should be the reason that, or even an excuse that people should be using, because there's so much to, I mean, there's so much more that people are really wanting. I mean, really just the heart to serve the people, like what you were saying. So I felt very inspired because of what you mentioned. I mean, even as a student, even as a resident in the UK, you were able to just like cast your vote and select the councils that are really, really benefiting the people. Mm. So I think that should really be the kind of model. But I am a little bit fed out though with the racial cards that are frequently played out.
Mm.
I guess that goes back to the education, as in the sort of education that we go through, and without realizing it, we are being brainwashed to think that that's just how it is. I mean, I grew up in a situation where I've not seen local election before.
Mm.
So we never knew that these things existed until we did our own research. So what more the next generations, they have not seen, they have not heard of all these things. But there's always constantly, I mean, the politicians are constantly using the racial card to just play it out. I guess someone has to be just bold enough and say enough is enough of this racial card.
Yeah, I think for our viewers and listeners, the background to the halting of the whole local election was, you know, in the 60s, the opposition, or I should say the non-government, somehow make a huge inroad, and a lot of non-Malay councillors actually were appointed. So that's why the whole local election has a racial undertone to it. Oh, it's like the non-Malay wants to seize power. You know, the usual propaganda. But people should open their own eyes and look, you know, the Malays, you are not threatened at all. You know, you have all the positions. You have the prime minister. You have the civil service. I mean, you have the majority of the people. That's why we go back to, remember a few, just last week or the week before, they were talking about a non-Malay prime minister. Why is that even an issue? If there is a non-Malay prime minister, it is because the majority of the Malay decide so.
Exactly.
So it will be your choice. That's democracy. And I guess that's the card that the political elite has been playing. And somehow I think a lot of voters are still trapped there. And I think that's the systemic part that we discussed earlier on. It is a reality. We don't want to minimize that. But at the same time, I think one of the focus, especially Michelle, you come from, you're not in education arena per se, but you enjoy teaching, imparting and things like that. And every time we talk about educating voters, right? I mean, it can sound a bit like we're putting down the voters and things like that. But do you, I think you definitely agree that there should be voters education, that it needs to be. I mean, these days we look at social media, people do 5 second, 10 second shorts. We're like, how can you teach people within 10 seconds? You can't do that. And you regularly do hours of training and people sit through it and they benefit from that. But let's talk about voters' education. And Lyra, I think you can chip in also. What can we do in a practical way? How can we educate voter, you know, and maybe just at a personal level, what's your passion? Or some people are into the one-on-one. Some people want to change certain system. But what's your, how do you think it can be done? And what's the area you feel most passionate in terms of voters' education?
I think people say again and again, over and over, that Malaysian voters are still very, what's a better word? Immature.
Yeah, I think
immature.
That's the right word.
So when we're not knowledgeable, we are immature.
Mm.
And so a lot of educating of the voters needs to happen. I used to be very immature in this area. All I said was, oh, this is all very complicated. It's all very dirty. I want nothing to do with it. Goodbye. That is very immature. And I believe a lot of people are still at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would need to really educate people about anything and everything. And I found that there was one year I had a very short teaching of some people, you know, with some people. And I even just put in like, you know, the political parties in Sarawak are these ones. And that's what the logo looks like and all that. And people's eyes went boing. And I was shocked.
I
said, you guys didn't know any of this? They said, no. I said, you've been voting for years. Yes. What were you voting? you know, it was like they kind of just went with whoever they knew, and that would be the incumbent. And that's all they knew. Mm-hmm. And so over and over, I hear people say they don't know anything. So if they go vote, it's just because their family members go vote, and they might as well. And the family members will say, oh, vote for this one, and they'll go and do it. Or they'll just say, oh, it's all going to be the same anyway, I'm not voting. So there's a fair number of people who don't vote, and there's a fair number of people who do, but just follow whoever.
Mm.
So it's very, very, very sad, actually, the situation. And so a lot of educating of the voters must happen.
It's very interesting that from time to time, you get people on polling day saying, who should I vote?
Exactly.
Who are my candidates? It's like shocking. It's, I mean, some people will so be like, shocking. Which area am I in?
It's like nobody does any homework. Nobody tries to find out more about the situation so that they can vote wisely. I think that's the word. You got to vote wisely.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point going to vote if you're just going to follow your mother or your family or whatever. And there's no, and it's definitely not a good thing to throw away your vote.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then what about those in the middle? They're like, you know, they're not even sure if they want to vote or not. And there are all kinds of reasons given during election time. So overall, people have to understand the value. And I think that year when everything turned, that year itself, that time, we actually totally shifted the Malaysian government, changed it. That should be a big lesson to all of us that anything is possible if we will just all put our heads and hearts and voting rights together. Anything is possible. So I think Malaysia should really be grown up by now. Mm. And if we cannot be grown up in 60 years or more, oh my. Mm. How old are we now? 60 plus? Yes? No, 60 on the dot. Yeah,
yeah, not too old. I mean, more like
not
teenage.
Not too old, but still.
Developing democracy. And yeah, I mean, I do agree the voters need to take personal responsibility.
Absolutely.
And that's another thing that we always talk about, right? If you want personal happiness, you have to have personal responsibility.
Absolutely.
If you want to say, look, government, please tell me what to do, then don't expect the ability to pursue happiness, because you can only do what you are being told.
Exactly. I really feel Malaysians rely too much on the government for everything. Mm.
Every big thing,
small thing, medium thing, everything is looked to the government. And I love what, there's an American called Lance Wallnau, and he says, when it comes to business and other things, don't ever look to the government. Always look at the business community to start the next business idea, start the next big business, etc. And when he said that, it was such a moment for me.
I immediately said,
oh my, yeah, there are other parts of society that can do the job way better than the government. And so he said, the government should be free to do, you know, to make policies and all that. Then let everybody else do the thing they're good at. Mm. So the business community should go ahead with the business ideas, but not the government. And I think our government has proven time and time again, they're not very good at business at all. So we really should let the right people do the right things.
And they want to continue to create more rules and regulations. Do you feel like, I mean, Lara, do you feel like since the pandemic, we have seen more and more rules? And
oh,
when
definitely.
It comes to, like personal taxation, it looks like the authority are hell-bent on just enforcing things. And now look at, you know, they want to roll back subsidy, which is a good thing. But the way they want to do it is, I need more information. I need more control. I need to know everything you do. But government shouldn't have that much power, right?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, it just reminds me of what happens in the United States, where they just have all the resources to hire more IRS agents. I mean, we don't need more IRS agents. We just need greater policies. Seriously, I mean, for people to really just be able to determine what's best for them. Because I think government shouldn't encroach into our privacy so much so that we are being scrutinized of every single little thing that we are doing. But going back to that, I think we should just really have, I mean, civic education that is being reintroduce, I think perhaps the, I mean, even the private tutors, even Papa Bears, Mama Bears, they could all champion this sort of cause and really just cause the younger generation to rise up and really just have that sort of awareness. Because when they turn 18, they're automatically a registered voter. We need them to be, yeah, we need them to be well-educated about which government it is. So if they are just doing their day-to-day normal education just to get the results.
100 marks, first position.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they will be able to recognize any logos at all. I mean, they will probably just recognize who is our prime minister. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, in the past, people kind of just recognize, I mean, Sawat, you have the scale, right?
You have the rocket. You have, I mean, now what you have? I mean, everyone uses the home bill, right? Now, Michelle, I know we kind of promised not a too long recording, so maybe we want to move on to the next part and kind of let me ask you a little bit about political development in Sarawak and just get some of your feeling and comments. And now people say right now the Sarawak state government GPS is having the greatest autonomy in its history because all the parties on the west are fighting each other. So whoever is government, whether you are Harapang or you are Perikatan, doesn't matter. You need Sarawak vote. And because of that, they have leverage. And so Premier Banjo, of course, is like riding high. But it seems like, I mean, in my view, it looks like he has support, but at the same time, he is also rolling out control and, you know, to secure his position. What do you think? I mean, it's like, I mean, what do you think of how Sarawakian voters are viewing this? You know, do they think it's a good thing or they have a different aspiration based on what you can see?
The thing with the Sarawakians is they'll say maybe quite a lot in the coffee shops. But whether this ever translates into votes is another matter altogether. And so with... I think about this. If I were the Premier Abang Joe right now, I would seriously use my leverage for Sarawak's sake.
Mm-hmm.
I would be making several demands. I would be making several deals that are really, really good for Sarawak. I don't see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see why they should be so gentle when the ball is in our court.
Yep.
And so...
I would love to be in his shoes right now.
It's very interesting. I hear West Malaysians saying that Abang Joe should be demanding one-third parliament seats.
Mm.
Abang Joe should be demanding...
A lot.
Higher royalty. Abang Joe should be demanding education and health autonomy. West Malaysian
are saying that, yeah.
Because they say he probably will get it.
He should get it if he knows how to... be a good wheeler dealer.
Yeah, because...
I'd be a really good wheeler dealer.
I mean, Anwar needs him more than he needs Anwar.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that's a bit strange, I feel, unless they have some kind of...
Unless they have something cooking in the background. Unfortunately, between Sarawak and federal, there's always been something cooking. This is the sad part. And that's why we have been where we are today.
I mean, seems Yaakob's time.
Since. And, but he seems to be doing some showy things himself with the hydrogen bus and everything. But is that what we need going forward? And as for the autonomy, are we really autonomous? I do not think so. I really don't. We don't see any of that. We don't feel it. We don't see it. But more and more and more Sarawakians are now waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And I see across the board, every race are now rising up and seeing that we need to have self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
What that's going to look like, whether full independence or whatever, is another matter. But more and more are rising up and speaking out. And I find the natives are doing that, which is excellent. We've been waiting for them to wake up for the longest time. And even the Malays are saying the right things too and saying, come on, whatever the Semenanjung
side are doing, it's just...
Yeah.
Not acceptable.
So thank God there are still many good Sarawakians, even good Malaysians overall, that are awake and realize what's happening. But then again, do we get the final say? Do we get that as a united say at the next election? Yep. This is that $1 million question, or shall I say $1 billion question. Again, a lot of educating of the voters must happen. And if it doesn't, people will continue as before. And I find that we very much act like ostriches with our heads in the sand, and that's not a good thing. So what I like to do with teaching and training people is I love to pull your head out of the sand. You may not like your neck pulled out, but I like the process of pulling it out. And that is very necessary, very, very much for Sarawak.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Americans say, God bless America, I would say God bless Sarawak. God bless Malaysia. Things have to change from now on. It cannot go on the way it is. It's getting from crazy to crazier. We cannot have that.
And of course, we talk about how you can change a system. You know, you look at the American system, they always have two party for a long time. They didn't manage to have new party, but the two parties are totally different from 10 years ago. So that would be one way, internal change. Or you look at the British model, then you have the Tories and the Labour, but now you have Reform Party, you have Brexit Party, you have the Democrat. So it could be multiple option, right?
Looks like it's getting to more multiple, but not many yet.
Of course, the latest big news is Wong Soon Koh's PSB is disbanding and joining with Tung Kin Sing's. And I'm not sure how SUPP is going to react. They are certainly not happy. But it's interesting, right? I mean, they say PSB has what, 800,000 members? They claim. Yeah, they claim, you know. And so, I mean, they do get the support, but doesn't quite translate into the vote they need.
It did not translate into votes the previous time. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
Because they even hook out, you know, basically the pro-independence with PSB had the one-time hook out in federal election, which is very interesting because some seats became competitive because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, PSB has some influence with the native and certain area. So do you think, it's very hard for us to look and predict the future. But what is your idea? I mean, what is your personal preference? Now we're going into the opinion realm, you know, like maybe I should say kind of predict based on your observation and, you know, how do you see the future unfolding?
I think right now it's a little bit still early days. But from what I have heard on the ground, the Chinese find it a very interesting merger. It's like a Chinese party with a Chinese party and both being very Fu Chao. So so I've heard people say they are rather happy with this new merger. And so we'll have to see what happens at the next election. But meantime, like I say, the different races are all waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And more are saying that if the federal side doesn't get their act together, then more and more people now are saying, then it'll be best if we really look for independence or something. And don't forget, in the early days, the push for independence was very, very hot in Cebu.
Yeah.
So we're still, you know, it'll be interesting to see that revived in some ways where the young people begin to understand all this stuff that I couldn't understand before but had to learn. And so it'll be a really good thing if people start to understand things and start to at least learn to love their land. I think that'll be the best thing forward for a start. Once you learn to love your land, then you need to then make a decision. How are you going to move forward with that? And then you cannot just sit back and do nothing if you love your land. If you love your future in this land, everyone needs to do something more than just even cast a vote. Each people group would need to decide. And I think the thing about Sarawakians is we're still very much more united.
There's still much around harmony, and we certainly don't want that eroded. Yeah. We really don't want that eroded. And I'm very, very optimistic about how we're going to move forward. And like I say, with more voter education,
it should be good. And it's good that there are some native peoples that are really putting strong messages out. And that should go towards educating the people more. But I think everyone should be able to do some things. And maybe we can put out some things too to really help people. But we have to put it out in three languages. That's usually how it works in Malaysia. And so on the education side, I find the way the education has been, you know, done and revamped again and again, I think that has been done to the detriment of the people. It's as if the government wanted to keep the people quite ignorant.
Yep.
And so if you have an issue with your language ability in any language, you are just that much weaker in being able to express yourself or even being able to understand what is going on.
Yep.
I heard recently someone said that your podcasts are too deep. I mean, my goodness, if these podcasts are too deep, what's the level of thinking of Malaysians? We cannot be so shallow. Mm. So I'm always concerned about these things. I do not like people to be shallow. I don't even like my clients to be shallow, and I'm always educating my clients, even in all the nitty-gritty of the law and what they should do and all that, so that they can make a wise decision. So everyone should be educated in all things so that they can make wise decisions moving forward. So be not ignorant, all of us, definitely. So we should do more of these podcasts.
Yeah, very interesting. And when I think about what you say about, you know, there is development on the ground and there is a wind of change, even though from Sarawak point of view, we haven't seen that translated into election result. But remember 2008 in Peninsula Malaysia, it's just all of a sudden a wind of change that totally unpredicted.
Right.
And so that can happen. And
again.
Yeah, so, but nobody knows when it's going to happen. But if there is that kind of ground swelling, we can. And you were mentioning about how the desire for independence, you know, Sarawak for Sarawakians. In fact, all those started off in the old days by SUPP, pre-independence.
Yes.
And the phrase self-determination came from one of the founders of SUPP.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting that they continue to fight until the federal government kind of bribed them in the 70s. And I mean, this is true history, but a lot of people don't want to talk about that. That when you offer, you know, it's like olden China, you know, once you show the gold, the money, the promotion, and people just say, okay, I give up. I'm not going to fight anymore. So I guess there's that legacy, but there is also that seed that is still there. So
definitely.
I remain quite hopeful that...
I remain very hopeful, and I remain hopeful that a young generation will rise up that cannot be bought. And that will be very important moving forward. So I think the older generation has shown itself to be way too careful, way too scared, way too fearful.
But I think a young generation is rising up that is not even fearful of death. And it can turn out very interesting. And imagine if we had a really young government. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Because even like, what was it, New Zealand or somewhere, they had a 30-something-year-old prime minister, wasn't it? And I think in the UK, in the days of William Wilberforce,
William Pitt was
only 30-plus when he became 30, prime minister. If it has happened anywhere else and in history, it can happen here. Why not?
That's like 18th century.
Exactly. So why not? But we are also seeing across the world in many nations, younger and younger prime ministers,
younger and younger governments. So why not Malaysia? Why do we always look to that group in the federal and also in the states of Malaysia? Why? We shouldn't have to, you know, only think they can do it.
Leadership is anyone can be a leader, especially a leader with a big heart for the nation. And so these ones should rise up.
Lara, you have any more questions for Michelle?
No, I mean, I'm just super mind blown.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of wanted to do a short recording, but I think it's really, really interesting. And to you know, part of education is to continue to instill hope.
That's
and
right.
That things can change for the better. And, you know, we're just talking to Lara because we kind of have a break with our podcast and then to do all this casual setup. And remember, this year, 2023, is coming to an end, and it hasn't been a great year from the federal government point of view, and it's just disappointment after disappointment. But at the same time, you know, personally, I'm just mindful that, yes, we are going through a process, and, well, there is still hope that, you know, our Prime Minister is knowing what he's doing. And
we sure hope.
And that's so I'm a bit more relaxed about that, and just let's see what 2024 brings us, because part of me felt like he is being subtle on many things and he just let things happen, but he actually has a different agenda that we had not seen yet. It's just my personal feeling that he might surprise us with some positive news.
Well, there's a part of me that feels the same. But at the same time, after waiting that long to become Prime Minister, I am praying that he does not waste his chance.
Yep.
And that he really will do good by the nation, and be honourable to the people, mm-hmm. and be faithful to his high position.
Yep.
Because I think time and time again, Malaysian politicians forget that the high position brings a lot of responsibilities, and you are not to take that position lightly. It is not a position for you to fill your pockets or the pockets of your cronies or your family members. It is actually a position of great responsibility,
mm-hmm.
That can bring a lot of blessing to the people and to the whole nation.
Yep.
And I think they need to remember not to be so selfish. It is not about you filling your pockets, as I have said, but it's really about if the nation is well-to-do, if the nation is good, we all benefit. What's so bad about that? And so I think the Middle Eastern nations have proven that,
yep.
that everyone can prosper. What's so bad about that? It doesn't make you less rich, but all of us can prosper. That should be the heart of the leader. And the Middle Eastern kings and all that have done really well on this. And it's been wonderful to see that happening. So if they can do it, why not us?
Yep.
So as we look around the world, if anyone else can do it, why not us? So it's about time, Malaysia, that we should do this. It's about time, Sarawak, that we do this.
So let's hope 2024, which is coming real, real soon, will be a different year for us.
Absolutely. God bless Malaysia and God bless Sarawak.
And I think with that, our time has come. So, Michelle, thanks for coming to this show, and we hope not 1 year till the next episode.
I hope so too.
Yeah, we should arrange for more, okay?
Yes, let's do it.
And with Sarawak election coming out real soon, maybe we'll have more discussion and analysis on that.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so until next time, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye for now. Thanks for having me.
Always.